Let's continue our NFL draft coverage. Friend of the program, Jordan DeZanny, CBS Sports. Jordan, top of the morning. Thanks for waking up with us.
My friends, what's going on? Thanks for having me on the show this morning.
What is the biggest storyline as we are here, NFL Draft Day, round one? What's the biggest storyline?
That's a good question. I've got two, and I think they go hand in hand. It's the trade market atop the NFL draft board, and also J.J. McCarthy, where exactly his stock is, what teams are high on him, where exactly he could be selected. So for the longest time, people have been mocking the Los Angeles Chargers at number five as the team to move down the draft board while someone like the Vikings moves up. But now the Arizona Cardinals at four seem like another tangible situation for that team to move down, and maybe the Los Angeles Chargers stick and pick. So I would compare it to these. There are these two blonde twins, and you want to ask one of them out to prom, and one may be easier to negotiate with. Her name is Monty Austinport. So the problem is she wants to wait until the last minute to give you her answer for prom, but the other twin is expecting a grand gesture as well. So which one of these teams, if either, are going to land a trade deal, and which team is going to move up? Is it the Minnesota Vikings? Is it the Las Vegas Raiders? Could it even potentially be the Denver Broncos? And then on top of that, I'm kind of interested to see where all these teams have J.J. McCarthy ranked, because are we absolutely sold that he's going to be a top five pick? So the draft really starts in that top five, of course, and I'm really excited to see how it all goes down.
Well, when you gave me that layout with the twins, it made me just go back to high school with going to prom by myself, just with the boys, just going stag and not dealing with anybody. So that makes me ask, Jordan, how confident are you on a scale of 1 to 100 that we do have a trade in the top five?
You know, everyone seems to believe that a trade's going to happen in the top five. That kind of makes me want to be a renegade and say we're not going to have one. But ultimately, I do think that because you're drafting a premier position and J.J. McCarthy's hype, his stock, if you will, has indeed soared, I don't know what the reasoning is behind that, because we can talk about him as a prospect later, but I do think that there's a decent chance we do see a trade somewhere in that top five. Because, again, I really do think that the Los Angeles Chargers and the Arizona Cardinals would like to move down to acquire extra draft capital, especially in the situation of the Chargers. I mean, there's a reason that people are mocking J.C. Latham to him, and that's because he's someone who would fit the Chargers team as it is right now under Jim Harbaugh. The problem is taking J.C. Latham at number five overall seems a little bit rich. So we'll see what happens.
Jordan, good morning, and thanks for joining us. You mentioned it at the beginning. We've been talking about J.J. McCarthy, and one of the things I was saying that interests me in this draft – draft night interests me all the time every year, but this one is of keen interest to me because the biggest position in the game, quarterback, and there's so many names in the mix there, and you even mentioned it in one of your articles on CBSSports.com. What do you think the odds are that there could be as many as six taken in this first round, six quarterbacks? Bo Nix is the one I feel it might be a little bit of an outlier, but do you think he could still sneak into the first round?
Absolutely. This draft could absolutely match history tonight from 1983 when we had a record-breaking six quarterbacks drafted in the first round. We absolutely could see that, and you know, you kind of brought it up. The biggest thing is that quarterbacks are a premier position, so they're going to be overdrafted naturally. I don't care what round you're talking, whether it's first, second, third, fourth, fifth. But on top of that, if you draft your signal caller of the future in the first round, you also get that valuable fifth-year option tacked onto the rookie contract, so that gives you more time to negotiate if you indeed hit on your quarterback of the future. So it's really tough. I mean, I think we see five on the dot, with Michael Penix Jr. being the last one. I've been sold that he's going first round. I already betted at plus 150 a couple weeks ago, and it seems like he's someone who's really caught steam over the past couple of weeks, maybe even past couple days, to be a first-round pick. The Las Vegas Raiders, I know, have been reported to really like him at 13. He could even go higher than that. Who knows? So I think if I had to put money down again, I'm going to say that exactly five go on the dot. Bo Nix suffers some kind of Will Levis slide where he goes early day two.
What do you attribute the top of the draft being so offense heavy? You know, we might set a record tonight for longest going without a defensive player taken. If the Falcons stay at 8 and take a defensive player, it will tie the record from 2021 with J.C. Horn. What do you attribute that to? Just a lot of elite talent at the top for offense? quarterbacks being so important, wide receivers being so important now, a lack of studs on the defensive side. Which one is it?
I think you named all the reasons. It's not just one thing. I mean, first of all, we have three quarterback needy teams kicking off the draft, so quarterbacks are going to go there at seven, the top three. Then we have a couple of wideouts who seem like otherworldly talents with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. That's going to be five picks somewhere right there. This is considered a really good offensive line class as well. There's some studs such as Joe Waltz, who's going to be a top 10 lock. So there's a lot of studs on offense, but on top of that, you talk to some people that they don't have many, you know, first-round talents graded on the defensive side of the ball. So I think there is somewhat of a quote-unquote lack of studs on defense, even though there's plenty of defensive players that I'm in love with in this class. But with how the draft order shook out, with the quarterback needy teams, with, again, with the stud wideouts, I think is the really big thing as well. We don't know where Brock Bowers is going to be thrown in the top 10 either. I think there's a combination of reasons for why we are going to see an NFL record matched or broken tonight when it comes to the first defensive player taken.
Jordan, the depth of these offensive positions, I feel like it's been a big highlight of a lot of teams around the league leading up to this draft process. Do you feel like it's more likely that you see teams kind of move up maybe back into the first round to try and go get a guy that they really like? Or do you think that a lot of these teams are maybe valuing some of the depth and maybe move back out of some of their round ones and into, you know, later into day two picks to try and secure some of these later round guys?
It's definitely the latter. Teams are going to be willing to trade down, especially if you reside in the back half of the first round, because I really do think that this is a deep class. Like, I have my team that's better than, you know, where I have guys who are going on day two who I think should be potential day one picks. I have guys going on day three who I think should be potential day two picks as well. So I think this class is just deep in general. I mean, we know people talk about the wide receiver position. That looks incredibly deep, in my opinion. Same with the offensive line, offensive tackle, if you will. I think teams are going to be willing to trade back and acquire extra draft ammunition to utilize in this deep class.
What would you do if you're the Tennessee Titans at seven?
Well, yeah, it matters on who's on the board, right? So if Joe Waltz is on the board at number seven, that's who I'm leaning towards taking. And I'll tell you, John, I kind of went from going like, yeah, I'd really like Joe Waltz in Tennessee, to saying, man, I really hope that Joe Waltz is available at number seven. I'd really like that guy at left tackle. I mean, I don't have to tell you how much of a need that is. I don't have to tell you how important it is to shore up the left side of your offensive line for the next decade to come. But, I mean, there's a reality where Joe Waltz not on the board and he's taken by the Los Angeles Chargers. And then that's where I think Tennessee might go Malik Nabers. Even though they addressed the wide receiver position in the offseason, you really can't have enough wideouts, especially young wideouts, because we know DeAndre Hopkins could be playing his last season in Nashville, and then Calvin Ridley is 29, turning 30 years old. But it's interesting. What if both of those players are gone? That's where I think my number one option would be trading down and acquiring, hopefully, a third-round pick in such a trade. Maybe you can get your left tackle, Olufoshanu. Maybe J.C. Latham actually experiences some kind of fall. So the Tennessee Titans are going to have some options, but number one, in my opinion, would hopefully to get Joe Alt at seven.
Yeah, J.C. Latham, the big steam guy today. Three, Traeger, Charles Robinson, they both have him going at number five to the Chargers, which means that they've got some information somewhere that the Chargers are in love with J.C. Latham, because there's no way we went from, you know, a week ago that not being the case to now everyone kind of thinking that. So it'd be interesting. So if Nabers and Alt are both there for the Titans, you lean offensive lineman, because it seems like Callahan is kind of planting the seeds that the wide receiver is more valuable, because he said, even I believe yesterday or 2 days ago, said, you know, we view the tackle class as much deeper than the wide receiver class. Things like, hey, the top of the wide receivers are elite, and then there's a bit of a drop-off where he said, hey, I think we can get a good tackle, you know, into the second round even.
Yeah, that's very possible. I mean, there's tackles day two who could definitely be starters day one, if you will. But Callahan knows more than I do, for sure, but I would argue that the wide receiver class almost seems deeper than the offensive tackle class. But to his point, there definitely are offensive tackles who are going to go day two, day three, that are going to be legitimate starters in the league. So it really comes down to the Tennessee Titans board. They're going to have it lined up vertically and horizontally as well.
No, I'm asking you. I'm asking Jordan DeZanny, Joe Waltz, or Malik Nabers. They're both there. Do you want the wide receiver or do you want the tackle? Do you want to score points flashy-wise, or you want to, like, sustain your offensive line and hopefully keep your quarterback alive?
I'm taking Joe Waltz because he's the best chance we have of properly evaluating my young quarterback, Will Levis, in year two.
Jordan, here's a quick question for you. We've been talking about the Titans here. I'll keep it in the AFC South, but I'm from the state of Indiana. I'm a Colts guy. Would love to get your take because I'm seeing, you know, and this is the way it is, I know, with mock drafts, that, you know, you can get a different point of view on every single one of them, but I'm seeing names for the Colts, like, runs the gamut, you know, Byron Murphy to trading up to get Malik Nabers to, you know, Ursay saying, God, we'd consider a trade up to get Marvin Harrison Jr. And then lately, I've even seen one where there's the possibility of Brock Bowers slipping down to that 15th pick. What are you hearing? What do you think what would be your take on the Colts situation at this point? Do you think they're out of the conversation in terms of trading up, or do you think they would be open to doing something like that?
No, I think they're absolutely in the market for trading up. But if we're talking about a player for like Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think that's exactly really going to happen. But when it comes to the Colts and who they could take in the first round, of course, it comes down to their board. But it's a position I'm specifically looking out for is in the secondary at cornerback, whether that be Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, whether that be Quinion Mitchell, who I would argue is my cornerback one in this class. He was so dominant at the Senior Bowl. Getting that new cornerback one for Indy would be a smart idea, in my opinion. But you bring up a player who I think has his best match, his best potential landing spot would be with the Indianapolis Colts, and that's actually Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia. And there's a couple of different reasons why. For one, Shane Steichen, their new head coach, is someone who I really trust when it comes to offensive game planning and getting the most out of his weapons. That includes tight ends. These young tight ends who are versatile on the pass catch could really be the best friends of a young quarterback. So he's someone who could elevate Anthony Richardson's game and hopefully keep him healthy as well. Brock Bowers, when he talks to people, everyone says he's a top 10 talent. He's a top 10 talent. But I'm starting to doubt if he's really a player that's going to get selected in the top 10 just because of other teams' needs. You go back and look at how these first-round tight ends have fared over the past couple seasons. I look at Kyle Pitts. If you draft one of these young, talented pass catchers, you really have to game plan around them and have to game plan around getting them touches. And with young tight ends, not a lot of teams really want to do that offensively, it seems like. So with the Indianapolis Colts, I think they'd be a great fit for Brock Bowers.
Out of these top three quarterbacks, Jordan, who are you least confident in terms of having a successful NFL career and you know, and maybe just potential of place that they drop to? You know, it seems like you're going to have Chicago and Washington obviously taking that one, but you know, seems like a little bit of a coin toss where Drake May goes. But out of those two top three quarterbacks, I guess, who are you least confident in having a successful NFL career?
So I will tell you, I'm pretty sold that it's going to be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May at three specifically. That's going to be the top three picks in the draft. Now, as for if the New England Patriots trade out of that three spot, that remains to be seen. But you ask a really good question because I think most people have Caleb Williams as QB1, and you know he's considered the QB1 of this entire class. And I'm someone who's tried to stand on the table for Drake May. I really like this prospect out of North Carolina. He wasn't able to build on his 2022 campaign. You know, before last year, I was really thinking that he could potentially challenge Caleb Williams for that QB1 spot. But all of a sudden, here comes Jaden Daniels with a historic campaign at LSU. I can't really blame people for having him as the number two quarterback. I know some people actually have him as QB1 over Caleb Williams. But with Jaden Daniels, I think that he's going to be a lock to number two to Washington. So, you know, if you're asking me the quarterback I'm least confident in, I guess I would just have to say Drake May because I've definitely become pretty intrigued with Jaden Daniels as a prospect. He's someone who can really be a dual threat quarterback, but he's someone who's efficient through the air as well. More so than someone like Justin Fields. So I think Jaden Daniels is a really intriguing prospect. With Drake May, if I could make a case against him, there are definitely some inconsistencies with his game. Like, he will miss some open throws, but a lot of those I'll chalk up to the inconsistencies with North Carolina's offense in general. I really do like Drake May as a prospect, and he deserves to be a top three pick, in my opinion.
Do you buy J.J. McCarthy as being close to that level of prospect?
You know, I'm glad we're talking about McCarthy because I don't know what's exactly propelling his stock and propelling his hype to this level. I really do feel like it's Jim Harbaugh and his staff kind of behind the scenes so he can facilitate a potential landing spot at number five overall. But, you know, I really do almost appreciate the candor that some of these NFL draft analysts have talked about McCarthy because they've been honest saying, you know, we're all in alignment that McCarthy could have a better pro career than he did college career in terms from a production standpoint. But the fact that he's being talked about as a top five pick is pretty crazy to me because if I was an NFL GM, John, I'm not taking McCarthy in the top five. In fact, I don't know. He might be a top 10 pick maybe. I guess you could talk me into that. When I did my mock draft, I think I had a team trading up to number 10 with the Jets to select him. I think the Las Vegas Raiders. So McCarthy, I mean, he wasn't someone who shouldered the load on offense. And you kind of want that prolific production from your franchise quarterback, whether that be Michael Penix Jr. or even Bo Nix at better numbers. With J.J. McCarthy, he was efficient when called upon to make those throws on third down. He definitely has these athletic traits. And again, I'm in alignment that he could have a pretty good pro career. But he's a tough prospect to judge because, I mean, he only completed like 10 passes in the national championship game. And that was a common theme throughout the course of the 2023 season. So it's hard to evaluate what this guy's going to be. But I can tell you for sure, I'm just not an NFL general manager who could pull the trigger on picking him in the top five or trading up into the top five to select him.
Is Brandon Ayuk worth a first-round pick?
It's funny you ask that because an NFL general manager told the San Francisco Chronicle that he's not worth a first-round pick. But when our guy Jonathan Jones reached out around to different executives around the league, they kept pointing back to the A.J. Brown trade a couple of years ago for what Brandon Ayuk could be worth. And that was a first-round pick plus a third-round pick, I think it was. So in my opinion, I think he is, but I think you have to have the financial resources ready to pay him with this exploding wide receiver market that's just going to get crazier and crazier after the draft. But the situation seems to really be up in the air. But I did write a column for CBS Sports trying to buy or sell some of these biggest rumors. And for Brandon Ayuk being traded on Thursday night, I'm kind of selling that idea. But according to reports, it really does sound like the whole situation's up in the air.
Yeah, it's not crazy. Like, it feels like Brandon Ayuk is in a better spot right now than A.J. Brown was before getting traded to Philadelphia, right? In terms of standing in the league. I mean, he's a couple years older, but he's also, his numbers and his production have been better than what A.J. Brown did in Tennessee, right?
You're exactly okay. Right. I mean, he did something only Jerry Rice has done in a single season this past year, and he's regarded as one of the best route runners in the NFL. He's still a younger guy, so he's someone who is poised to break that wide receiver benchmark.
Jordan DeJani, CBS Sports, appreciate your time. As always, check out his work, CBSSports.com. Last question, open-ended. Maybe you don't have one at all, but just going to give you the floor. Do you have a best bet for tonight's NFL draft or even second or third round?
Yeah, it's interesting because I did my top five bets a little over a week ago, and one of those was Penix Jr., being a top 32 pick at plus 150, but those odds have already shifted dramatically. I told my boss last night, hey, I can come up with another top five bet to publish this morning, but it was really tough looking at how these lines have shifted, and they're so juicy right now. So I kind of got a little crazy with it. Like, if you wanted to bet Malik Nabers to be the pick at number 7 overall, regardless of team, that was plus 700. I think that's worth putting some money down. The same for Rome Odunze at number 9 overall, whether that's the Bears or not the Bears. I don't think he gets out of the top 10. So pick-specific props are something that I'm looking at right now because ultimately they'll give you the best bang for your buck.
Jalen Wright, 16-1 to be the first running back taken. I mean, it feels like it's not that.
That's a good flyer as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, even Nabers getting a draft ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. is like 9-1 this morning. That doesn't feel like a crazy long odd. Jordan, appreciate the time. Jordan Ajani on X. If you want to give him a follow, talk to you soon, brother.
Anytime, guys. Thanks so much.
Appreciate your time. Sam sends a break. We'll keep talking the draft afterwards.
Ever been the coach?
Does feel like Jalen Wright 16-1 to be the first running back taken is not terrible odds. I'd heard people saying he had the chance of being the first running back taken. I was surprised he had like the fifth or sixth best odds.
I think he's the second off the board, maybe. Second or third.
Who do you think's the first? Who's projected to be the first? I mean, I guess the odds have Jonathan Brooks.
That sounds right. Texas?
Yeah, I reckon. Trey Benson?
I think Jalen Wright's better than Trey Benson.
Blake Corum? Like, Jalen Wright's going to get drafted before Blake Corum, yeah. Right?
I thought it would be who's this USC kid? Is it Floyd? Is that his last name?
There's Lloyd.
Lloyd.
Marshawn Lloyd.
Marshawn Lloyd.
He has better odds. Those are the four guys with better odds than Jalen Wright. Jalen Wright comes in at the fifth best odds at 16-1.
Bucky Irving. Is he anywhere?
Not in the top five.
I think he tested bad at the combine.
Yeah, he's all the way down at plus 10,000. Yeah, he's down quite low on the list.
Can you get like the second running back taken? Are there odds for that?
Second tight end drafted, second wide receiver drafted, second offensive lineman drafted. I'm not seeing a second running back drafted. I guess because they know the first one's just such a crapshoot. And plus, it'll probably be in like the fourth or fifth round when it happens.
Yeah.
Whereas these others might be settled tonight. You know, they should, all the other positions. As far as Tennessee players in the draft, I mean, are we really – not really on watch for anybody getting drafted this year, right? Does it seem like?
It's like day three stuff is what
Joe Milton in a bad way.
I saw.
Right, I mean, Joe Milton and Jalen Wright are kind of the main people, like, and I guess, you know, Kamal Haddon.
Keaton, Small, but I mean, that feels like they're lucky to be in the day three conversation.
I would be absolutely shocked if, like, Small got drafted after his, like, athleticism test came back. He was in the red on a lot of those in terms of where he stacks up as a prospect. Yeah, like they do those draft profiles and like give him scores.
RAS, yeah.
Yeah, he was low on that, so I'd be shocked if he got drafted after that.
The one thing I saw some interview on one of the local stations with Joe, and they were, you know, talking about the draft, and I think the question came up about what, you know, what could you tell a team that's considering you, and he goes, he's always so pleasant, you know, but he was like, you know, that you're going to get a dog when you get. You know, it's just like, really? I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't equate that when I see him. I'm thinking about watching him play, but
ran out of bounds on fourth down.
Yeah.
Did run over that Texas A&M linebacker.
He did. I agree with that, but that's about it.
He's gonna get drafted. If you had to pick right now, Sam, over under 100. For his position.
Overall?
Nah, that's too low. Hold on. Over under 130.
Way over
130?
I think he's in the 180s to like 200.
I was going to say sixth round is what I'm thinking.
I think he's like capping out of the fifth is like his ceiling maybe.
Yeah. 130 would put him what? Like in the beginning of the fifth round basically? I think that's how that works
out.
Yeah,
early
fifth. Or in the comp picks in between the rounds or something like that. Yeah. I mean, I kind of think he'll be a fifth round. If you're setting the sixth or seventh, I'll take the
under.
Yeah, the under.
Always got to think about the draft stuff. I've messed up so many bets in my
life.
I know. Oh, no, I meant to do the opposite.
The worst that happened to me was I was doing a live rushing prop for a quarterback one time, and it was over under. It was like -1.5, and I hit under, and I meant over. Or maybe I hit under and I meant over, or over and under. I don't know. I got it mixed up. I got my negatives mixed up and I lost the money. After like I was like they're not gonna kneel down. No kneel downs. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, actually I need them to kneel down. Damn it! What am I doing here? I'll take fifth round though. Yeah, for Milton.
PFF's projecting Joe at 217, so that'd be seventh round. Right? Yeah.
I mean, it has to be, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're him, is that a success? Like, is the goal for Tennessee as a program, for Josh Heupel, for Joe Milton individually, like, is the goal right now just, hey, hear my name called? Get to have that moment where I'm drafted?
I think so.
Seventh round, you're locking that in if you're him?
I mean, not ideally, but like.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but like, is being a seventh round pick, I guess.
Yeah, making the show.
Yeah, at least you make the show and you don't get to say you're undrafted. I mean, Although, you know, of course, the good agents would tell you, like, hey, if we have any type of leverage at all, we'd rather go undrafted than get drafted in the seventh, just because that's a death sentence usually. Like, most seventh-round picks aren't making the draft. And you get to
go.
Yeah, you get to pick your team and pick, you know, the coaches and all that. So, like, maybe if you're saying seventh round, I'd say no. What if you're saying he's a sixth-round pick? You locking that in? At least you have somewhat of a commitment to the team. The team at least thinks something of you.
You're probably right. I think anything before the seventh round is probably pretty fine for him.
Okay.
Late seventh round.
Seventh round probably does hurt.
Yeah.
You know, you'd probably rather just go undrafted.
Seventh round.
He's such a fit-specific quarterback, you know?
Well, seventh round, I think you should probably just be looking for the small school guys. The diamonds in the rough are going to be happy to be there. Not the big-time prospects or big-time school guys that are like either just career underachievers or just like something hasn't clicked or you're just drafting them because of the school they went to type of thing.
I mean, this PFF rank of 217, I mean, I'm just sitting there doing the math in my head. I mean, that's the back half of the seventh round.
Yeah. It basically just means it doesn't get drafted.
Yeah.
But like I was excited when the Titans, you know, at the end of their draft last year, took the flyer on Colton Dowell, the wide receiver that we had played that was at one of those small Tennessee
Martin.
Schools. Yeah. Like I was like, okay, that's the type of guy you draft here. Like maybe find a diamond in the rough. And it didn't end up.
He was solid for a seventh rounder this year.
He was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he's better than just like the Cole McDonald guy or whatever.
God.
Taking a throwaway pick on a quarterback you're going to cut. Like, sure. But I'd rather take him and take a flyer on him and maybe a guy that slipped through the cracks.
Sure.
That's what I would rather have than Joe Milton, I guess, is what I'm saying in the seventh round.
Someone who's like busting their ass for their one chance in the NFL type of thing.
Yeah. And like, you know, like again, maybe just have been under scouted and just, you know, didn't have the best setup around them, but has the raw talent. And like you said, the grinder mentality. Like it's one thing to be at big schools and not saying everyone that goes to big schools, you know, lazy. I'm not saying that at all. Like, a lot of those guys are going to be grinders, but like, I feel like pretty much anybody that's on the radar in the NFL from those small schools are going to have like a special type of work ethic and a chip on their shoulder. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Bob, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, we talked about Milton, but staying on quarterbacks for a second. After those six that we talked with Jordan about that could all go in the first round, for sure would go, you know, probably by early second, who would be the seventh quarterback off the top of your head?
The seventh quarterback?
Yeah.
So we've talked about, Nix, Penix, McCarthy, and then the big three?
Correct.
The seventh quarterback? Hell, I don't know. Sam, you got anybody? Is it a big school or small school?
It's a big school.
I don't know. The fact I guess I know the Titans aren't taking a quarterback has made me not care at all outside of the top guys.
It shows you the drop-off's pretty precipitous, I would say that.
Is it like Sam Hartman or something like that?
No, he's not even in there. It's Spencer Rattler.
Oh, yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And you could argue to me that Spencer Rattler, you'd rather have him than Bo Nix. And I'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah, for sure.
If I'm some team, I'd spend like a fourth or fifth on him or something. I mean, he might not even fall that far.
That's what I was going to say. I mean,
I think Rattler's got some potential.
Yeah.
They've got him kind of projected late third round, that type of.
Some of those metrics show that Rattler made some big time throws with not a lot of talent around him and not a lot of time. Like,
I've heard the Falcons are a little interested in him. Sit him almost for a couple of years under Kirk, and when that contract's up.
That would be a decent flyer. I mean, second round, no, but the Falcons don't necessarily have a lot of holes on their team right now. They just keep saying, hey, we need a quarterback. But like, if you can tell me Spencer Rattler in the third, like, yeah, let him sit for a year or two.
I just can't root for him, man. It felt like he decided to break out in that Tennessee game, 22.
Those last couple games of the year, he was just crazy.
That's what I'm saying.
Clemson,
after
he was nuts.
Yeah. After that, it was like he was on fire. Yeah.
He's one of those guys that I always talk about. We've built up, we tore down, and now kind of the comeback. Like, you know, he went from that jerk, you know, yelling at his teammate in high school about, you know, you don't even know who I am or you're not on my level, whatever he was saying to him. Basically putting down like some other recruit because he's this big 5-star guy, and he went to Oklahoma and, you know, I don't want to say flamed out, but kind of flamed out. Got replaced.
Humbled.
Got humbled a little bit. Yeah, and had to go to South Carolina. And, yeah, it was annoying what he did to us in 2022, don't get me wrong. But I don't know if I actually dislike him. I don't know. I don't know if I'm rooting for him, but I don't think I'm rooting against him. I don't know what to think about Spencer Rattler. But I do think I would probably rather have him. I'd take a chance on him, especially if you're saying like third round versus first round for Bo Nix. Like, yeah, like if I'm Rattler, I think I'm better than him. Are there any prospects in particular you want to see their over under on? J.J. McCarthy right now, 5.5 with the juice on the under. So saying J.J. McCarthy is going to be a top five pick. I think there's value betting on the over here.
I think so.
Like J.J. McCarthy, top five pick, like that's going to require a trade. So basically you're betting against a trade. Yeah. At plus 120, like that's worth it, right, to sprinkle? Because, like, the Chargers aren't going to take him. Do the Chargers trade down and swap places with the Vikings? Okay, yeah, maybe. But, like, I feel pretty confident that New England likes Drake May. I feel pretty confident that the Cardinals are going to run to the podium and get Marvin Harrison Jr. So, really, like, you're just betting that the Chargers don't trade? Plus 120, I feel like it's probably more likely than not that they just take the best prospect.
I think that's a good value pick.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
J.C. Latham, another guy we've talked about, the tackle from Alabama that's rising up quickly. His over-under is set at 10.5 with the juice on the under. Basically, there, I think you're betting that the Chargers trade to 11. Like, the Chargers are 11. Like, that's where J.C. Latham's going to go. But, like, I can't see... You know, unless Joe Walt goes 5 and the Titans just say, bleep it, we're just grabbing the next best tackle, like, I don't see anybody else really taking him in the top 10. So maybe you just bet on both the overs and hope that, you know, you split them at least and you have a little plus money.
Sam and I were talking during the break about Bowers. Where do they have him?
Big Brock Bowers. His is 11.5 with the heavy juice on the over. So... if you're a Colts fan hoping that he falls to 15, the odds say he's not. I've seen the Jets for him pretty much the entire time.
I think you're right.
The Jets don't really have a tight end. He can, like we kind of talked about the Titans, Sam, he can kind of shore up your offensive line a little bit by helping, but also help you in the passing game. I think that makes sense for an aging quarterback to have a good elite tight end prospect.
I was going to say, I think if Aaron Rodgers has their ear at all, I'm sure that's one he's talking up to.
Anybody else interest you, Sam? Jared Verse seems low at over 19.5.
That seems kind of low to me as well. He seems like easily the top. I would say he's maybe the number two edge off the board after Dallas Turner. I think he's better than that Latu kid.
I was going to say Latu's got some hype. But even then, like, I don't think it's far-fetched that you have basically the first 10 picks be offense and the next 10 picks you have, like, 4 or 5 defensive players taken.
What's, like, Brian Thomas?
Brian Thomas.
Wide receiver.
21.5.
Okay.
Slight juice on the over.
It's a good line.
We've talked a lot about him. What about Penix?
Michael Penix Jr. What do you think it is, Bob? What would you set the over-under at?
I would set it around 13.
Well, they got it set at 32.5.
Really?
I think it's just because, like, if he gets past 13, it's just one of those things, like, where you just it'll be just in the second round, pretty much. Like, you could still maybe cash, you know, if somebody trades back up. But, yeah, basically it's like, is he a first-round pick? And heavy juice on the under, like, minus 400, like – to the fact that they're just not moving the line. Like, yeah. They've had enough action where they're just not moving it. They're not going to lose anymore on the under.
Ladd McConkey,
funny you should ask, Alan. 34.5.
Interesting.
So, like, you know, he had been talked about maybe sneaking in the first round. I guess that's slowed down a little bit. The juice is on the under. That's still my pipe dream at 38. So I would still love for the Titans to add him to that receiving core. If you told me you could get him in addition to Joe Walt, like, to me, that's best case scenario. Or what Peter Schrager said is where you take Joe Walt at 11, come out with extra picks. Like, that's the big thing.
When Easton yesterday was talking about Ricky Pearsall, I wouldn't mind him at all either. I like him a lot out of Florida. I think he's got some Ladd McConkey in him too.
As in, he's white.
Yeah, and a good route runner.
Yeah,
that's a white guy.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, Pearsall did show flashes. But Pearsall, was he talking about drafting him, like, later in the draft?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, second round, that would make me mad.
I think I was more of the trade down scenario, get later into the second type thing or something like that.
One more, Dallas Turner, because we've been talking about defensive players and where they end up, and it seems like he might be the first one off the board whenever he hits.
Yeah, let's see. I'm not seeing his over-under. It's in alphabetical order. They don't have one up for him.
Huh.
What about tackle two? Old Fashanu, I guess, in terms of left tackles, not right tackles like Latham.
What's his first name? It's like
Olu.
Yeah.
Olumuya.
Yeah, his isn't up there either.
Really?
Oh, no, here it is. Hold on. His is 13.5, heavy on the over.
Okay.
So they've had him dropping quite a bit.
Yeah, kind of.
Especially now that, like, Latham seems to have completely cleared him.
He's got, like, the smallest hands in the world. They've put his measurements out, and he's got hands that are, like, much smaller than certain, like, quarterbacks and, like, running backs, and he's just a massive left tackle.
The Kenny Pickett syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. He's got Kenny Pickett hands.
Are you positive that Dallas Turner's the first defensive lineman taken?
I think so, yeah.
Was he a game changer at Alabama? Was he like a wrecker? Because, like, I've just asked because I keep coming back to Jared Verse, which is like
Verse me, is a monster.
Which is me, like, watching college football and not necessarily, like, looking at projections in the NFL. Because, like, to me, Jared Verse jumped off the screen every time I watched Florida State.
He's a monster.
Verse
yeah.
is a stud, yeah.
But he's all the way down at 50-1. And I'm just wondering, like, are we sure he can't be, like, somebody's not going to fall in love with him that the Falcons wouldn't take him? We sure? Is it worth $20 to win $1,000 that Jared Verse is the first defensive lineman taken? Are we sure Dallas Turner is that much better than him as a prospect? Because it seems like everyone agrees that he is, but again, this is me just watching college football. Like, I don't really remember watching Dallas Turner too much stand out, you know, for Alabama. But every time I watched Florida State, it was the Jared Verse show. I'm going to lose so much money on these, like, position guys. Like, Jalen Wright, first running back taken. Neighbors, first wide receiver taken. Jared Verse.
I wouldn't do the Jalen Wright one.
Just go a little sprinkle.
I mean, it's a fun bet, for sure.
It's a little sprinkle.
If you can find the second running back taken, I think that's way smarter.
He's got the most athleticism. He's more athletic than any other running back. You know, maybe somebody falls in love with the athleticism.
I just don't want you to lose money, John.
It's fine. I've done it before. I'll do it again. No big deal. Nothing I can't handle.
You'll just hit on one of these.
Sell some blood.
9-1s. Yeah.
Do any blood and plasma.
Let me know.
Yeah. Deliver some food. This is my Jalen Wright food delivery.
It feels like Verse has dropped a lot, too. Like, over the course of you know, how this offseason has gone, it seems like Verse was, at the start, slated to be, like, that number one defensive
player. Well, that's what I thought. Like, I feel like I saw him mocked to the Falcons earlier this, like, in this process. Now, I understand that changes, and maybe he didn't test well and all that, but just, like, I don't know. I feel like he was in that conversation. To see him at 50-1, just a little head-scratching. Little head-scratching. All right, any final draft thoughts? We will have the Fan Run War Room tonight, 8 p.m., live on the Fan Run app and on the YouTube if you want to watch the video. Marcus, Tucker, I know William from Overtime. I'll be hanging out. I don't know anybody else on the guest list, but I'll be hanging out, watching the boys, talking with the boys, enjoying me some White Claws out in the lounge. I'm not going to be hanging out in here the whole time. Going to be a lot of body heat in here. And
yeah.
I don't really like being in here with Marcus. He just takes up a lot of space. We're both kind of I don't, you know, he's just
but we have
unpleasant
to
look
to
at. I think they're having call-ins too.
I might call in around the Titans pick.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that the fan, you know, other Fan Run personalities will call in. Mm-hmm. I live like 5 minutes away. It's not far from me to hang out here.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to take phone calls, too, from the audience. So.
Okay.
The Fan Run War Room, make plans to hang out with us 8 o'clock during the draft. Bob, any final draft thoughts?
No. Let's get to it, though. I'm ready.
All right, it's last call on the other side. We'll talk some NBA playoffs and ask a question that everyone wants to know. What were you thinking?
Your tax refund belongs.
Closing in on the weekend. Going to have a nice weekend weather-wise. If you're so inclined to maybe do a little camping, RVing, go check out Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Really great facilities. Makes you feel like $1 million when you're going out and camping. Want more detail, go check them out. tworiversrvresort.com.
I was wrong about the Celtics last night. I said that Miami had nothing for them. Turns out Miami did have something for them as the Heat beat the Celtics, even that series at one. Bad, bad night for Kristaps Porzingis. And it allowed the Heat and Tyler Hero and Bam. And you got the Caleb Martin game. Caleb Martin morphed back into last year playoff run Caleb Martin as he scored 21 points, hit 5 threes, 5 of 6 from three. And, yeah, that big three of Caleb Martin, Bam, and Hero takes down the NBA's best team despite Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum combining to score 61 points.
Is that Heat culture or is it 23 of 43 from three-point range? I mean, they were unconscious. They could not miss. It was impressive. And to me, I thought the Celtics looked a little bit soft, which has been something that's befallen them before in the playoffs.
Hey, maybe Caleb Martin taking Tatum down on that rebound at the end of the game lit a fire under the Heat's ass and made my made Boston a little hesitant to go around the paint. I don't know, but yeah, 101 points for the Celtics. That's a far drop from what they were in the regular season. They didn't play well offensively.
Might have woken them up though. I still think this thing could be. I'd call it a gentleman's sweep. I still think it could be that. I could see him going out and winning three in a row now, but.
So do you call a gentleman's sweep just any five-game series? Because growing up, I always thought the gentleman's sweep was like you win the first, and then you let the first three, and then you let them win the fourth game at home. That way they get to drop the confetti and celebrate, and then you go back home and you beat them 4-1.
That might be that. I've just always called it a 4-1.
Okay.
Yeah.
In my head, always, because people call all five-game series gentleman's sweeps now, and it's kind of one of my sports ticks, my sports icks that, like, we talked about that, like, you hear it, and it's like, that doesn't feel right. Because, yeah, growing up, I always thought it was, like, 3-0. The one that comes to my mind is, like, the Heat back in the LeBron era go up 3-0, and then, like, Carmelo and Amari get to have, like, a big Game 4 win, and the Knicks are dropping confetti and, like, celebrating like they had finally won a championship just because they won a game. And then, like, yeah, the Heat take care of them in Game 5 and get the extra home playoff revenue for their owner and then, yeah, get them out of here.
Interesting stat from that game last night. The Heat, they're only the fourth team in the last 30 years to be a double-digit underdog but win that game by double digits. Hasn't happened often. I think the last time it happened was like 98. So did not see it coming. I don't think many did, although I did do a live bet last night, money line on the Heat, and made a little bit of money.
Nice. Good job. I did not bet on that game. Did no action on that game. And then I got destroyed by the Thunder last night. What were I thinking was the question I asked myself. What were I thinking? Because, yeah, you know, I kind of thought, okay, the Thunder got their bad game out of the way. Game one, they won. I was like, are they really going to struggle again in game two? And they did not. Chet Holmgren was awesome in the first half. Had 20 points in the first half despite some foul trouble. He whipped Jonas Valanciunas' ass. Like, the Pelicans, if they're going to have a chance in that series, they have to get Zion back, but I think it's going to be too late. So they looked like a one seed last night.
And I know tonight's all about the draft, but we'll see if Knicks, Philly, and Denver Lakers can repeat any of the magic they had the other night. I can't imagine those games will be as good as those two were, but kind of the fork in the road tonight for the 76ers and the Lakers. Must win situations.
This is going to sound dumb and it's probably going to age really poorly, but I throw the Magic in there too. Like, I think the Magic still have a chance in that series, which is crazy because they look so bad in the first two games, but I still think they're going to win their games in Orlando. Like, I think their role players will play better and I think Cleveland's role players will play worse. That's usually what happens on the road in the playoff games. Like, when you go home, your team plays better and the other teams, you know, they don't. Those guys miss shots. So the Magic, I think, a one-point favorite tonight. I do like them to win. Lakers, 1.5-point favorites. Coin flip, some places, depending where you look. Surely they finally end this streak and win, but, like, I don't know how demoralized they're going to be after game two. If I had to pick one team to win out of those two matchups, I'd probably have more confidence in Orlando beating Cleveland just because I think you'll have a really raucous crowd and that young team will play better at home. I expect the Sixers, I don't want to say to roll, but I expect them to win that game by somewhere between 7 to 12 points.
Yeah, they're due. They're due. I agree with that one. I think they win pretty comfortably.
Now, the Lakers, I know I talked about them being demoralized, so the Sixers could be too, but I just think the Sixers just match up better with the Knicks than the Lakers do with the Nuggets, and there's also, you know, 10 games in a row in terms of negative results for them, so it'd be a little bit easier to be demoralized as you've given them your best punch. If you're the Sixers, you feel like you're better than the Knicks.
Yeah.
You can't convince yourself you're better than the Nuggets if you're the Lakers. So I expect the Sixers to win comfortably.
I think that's a good segue into what were they thinking?
What were they thinking?
Because one of them is the NBA office, their the recap of their two-minute report. That's that game two against with the Sixers and the Knicks, saying that the refs missed two fouls in that little scurry at the end with Tyrese Maxey.
Said they made four mistakes.
Yeah.
So missed two fouls on Maxey's turnover and also missed Nick Nurse calling timeout. They said that Nick Nurse should have been awarded a timeout. So if I'm Philadelphia, like, thanks for nothing. Like, this doesn't matter because it's not like they're going to honor the Philadelphia grievance filing that the officiating was bad and cost them the game. They're going to deny that appeal. While also saying, yeah, no, we missed four calls down
the
stretch. What's
the point of these appeals?
Exactly, and that's
why would you play the damn game again?
Yeah, why would you even bring it up?
I mean, guess just to let the fans know, like, hey, we're taking ownership, we messed up. Like,
hey, you can blame the refs.
Yeah, time. Like you don't get to gas. Like, they're not gaslighting the fans, being like, you just are complaining for nothing. Like, yeah, actually, we missed it, and like we know we missed it, and we'll try to be better at it instead of like keeping our head buried in the sand and pretending like everything is fine. But yeah, like, what does it do? Nothing. Like, it doesn't make me feel better if I'm a Sixers fan. If I'm a Knicks fan, it doesn't make me feel worse. It's like, hey, calls happen. Whatever. It's the Garden, baby. The Garden was rocking. Like, that's how it feel.
And then we got one more. What were you thinking? Arizona State coach Herm Edwards receives a 5-year show cause penalty from the NCAA for recruiting violations involving more than 30 prospects, 30, during the COVID-19 no-visit period. It's one of the longest show cause penalties handed down to a football coach in NCAA history. The guy that says you play to win the game, well, he was definitely trying to recruit and tamper to win the games.
Well, not, yeah, to me, it's embarrassing because Herm Edwards is a guy that sells himself morally and
yes,
ethically.
True.
And sells himself as a good person. And I don't mean that just because he's cheating at his job makes him a bad person, but you know what I mean? Like, he's about like young men and like raising young men and doing the right thing. Like, that's been his brand on ESPN the last, you know, 20 years.
Yes.
Other than the whole time he was telling people to have a fall guy to take the blame for you whenever you get in trouble. Like, maybe that wasn't, maybe that should have been some red flags for us that he is willing to bend the rules as long as he has somebody else to blame, but no one else to blame here. The show cause doesn't really mean much because his career's over. Like,
yeah.
No one's going to hire him, but it's embarrassing for him.
He makes money doing TV, so he's fine. But, yeah, just kind of – yeah, definitely the embarrassment now. It's kind of like, man, that's your sign-off as a coach.
I don't want to say it's like Bill Cosby, but it's not like Bill Cosby. The G.I. Jake Show coming up next. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio.